At RCR, we're on a mission to revive honest media, to report on critical censored stories, and to hold those in positions of power to account. But to make this happen, RCR needs to grow, and grow fast. For that, we need your support. Our Foundation Members Club is now open. Join us today and play your part in bringing back media you can trust. Learn more at www.realitycheck.radio/members and see how you can join the mission that's making a difference.
RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Glenn Thomas is a leading educator on the value of holding actual gold and silver in terms of protecting wealth. He co-founded Gold Survival Guide during the financial crisis way back in 2009, which is now New Zealand's most comprehensive online resource for information on precious metals. Glenn and the Gold Survival Guide team have assisted thousands of clients from USA, Europe, Asia, and Australasia in securing a portion of their wealth from the dangers linked to the global financial system by purchasing physical gold and silver bullion. And Glenn is back with us at RCR to talk about an article he wrote titled "Why the New Zealand Super Fund Should Invest in Gold in 2024. Glenn, nice to have you back. I think it's been about a year almost.
Yeah, I think you're right, Paul. Yeah, thanks very much for having me get back again. Yeah, pleasure to be here and talk with you and share a bit of info with the folks out there on RCR World.
Yeah, you were World. I like that. You were one of the early guests on this program. So yeah, great to have you back. Okay, yes. I've just been reminded, change of government. They're into mining, and hey presto, a month or so ago there was a story there in the South Island somewhere that a mining company had hit on gold, possibly in ounces terms, about $7 billion worth. So clearly, we have gold in the ground in New Zealand. I'm just thinking here, if we've got a New Zealand super fund, wouldn't it be in their interest to go mining?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it would be, and it would probably be in all of our interests, because when miners do mine, there's a royalty that goes back to the government as well. So even like a private company here in New Zealand or an offshore owned company, there's still a royalty that's actually produced and some revenue is generated. But I think you're probably more talking about the point of, wouldn't it be beneficial to actually dig the stuff up and hold it and hang on to it ourselves?
Totally. As a national effort on behalf of all the taxpayers, all the citizens.
Yeah, well, that would definitely be a benefit, especially since our Reserve Bank doesn't hold any gold whatsoever on their books. They've got a grand total of 0 ounces.
And really?
When you look where, I'm trying to think who comes ahead of us. There's countries like Chad, and I'm trying to remember what, there's a few other countries that you might have trouble finding on a map, or that you might think, do they even have an economy in which to back up with gold? But we've got 0 ounces of gold. We got rid of it all. We didn't have that much anyway, but we got rid of it all, well back, just as they did they haven't got rid of all of it, but Aussie and the UK, they also divested a lot of their gold back in the 80s, I think it was, off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But we don't have any whatsoever. So in my mind, that kind of, opens us up to a fair bit of risk, and especially when you see there's other countries around the world that are doing the exact opposite, and they're actually, in fact, gold, that's still been the biggest buyers of gold in over the last multiple years, but particularly over the last year, are actual countries or central banks, really, and sovereign wealth funds and that sort of thing. So it's actually the central banks that have been doing a lot of buying over the last year, whereas with what we're seeing, the actual demand is actually not that high from the retail or the average kind of consumer. So they're the ones that are still buying it, and you'd have to wonder why they're buying it, maybe bigger than they ever have before, and what do they know and what are they worrying about that maybe the average person in the street isn't. Particularly, you've got, like, China's been doing it for a long time, but they're not the only central bank.
I read somewhere, is this true, that they've got 8,000 tons of gold?
Yeah, well, it's a bit hard to know what's true and how much and all the rest of it, because China didn't really, until recently, they'd only report their holdings every once in a while, like as in multiple years. Now they probably do it more sort of yearly, but again, it's hard to know what the total is, because there's the total that's actually reported and held by the central bank, but then other could be held elsewhere within their kind of wider government, you know, with sovereign wealth funds and other things and other ways of holding it. So, yeah, I mean, there's various schools of thought. Some people think that China might actually have more gold than what the US has got now. I don't know whether they would have necessarily more or whether they've even got as much, but I think they're working towards trying to get something similar if they haven't already, just to kind of, you know, balance the books a bit better, and maybe to get a, you get a, history kind of shows you get a bigger seat at the table when they sit around and sort of work out how the global monetary system's going to work. And, you know, that's why the US dollar's at the center of it, because they're the ones that actually held all the gold back in the last time they sat around a table and rehashed things out. And so I think personally that's probably coming again at some point, maybe in the coming years, maybe in the next decade or less. But yeah, so, and I guess back to your original point about the digging up and actually holding the gold, yeah, well, that would probably be a pretty good idea, because it would give, you know, the New Zealand economy and the New Zealand people a cornerstone and a sort of foundation that, regardless of what happens elsewhere, you know, there'll still be something there. And as I said, there's still lots of central banks that hold it, as much as they probably don't like to talk about it too much. They still hold it for whatever reason, and that's because it's actual real stuff, real value. And as we spoke about, you know, a while back, it's been of value for a long time, you know, millennia, basically. So
made at the center of supernova explosion somewhere.
That's it. Yeah, it's
light years away and hundreds of billions of years ago. Hey, yeah. In terms of the mix of the New Zealand super fund, I believe it returns quite well. So I think it's done quite well. You'll tell us how well. Yeah. What's the mix of asset classes, let's say, that we operate here?
Yeah, well, I think from what I've seen looking in the latest fund report from the NZ Super Fund, I mean, yeah, they, as you said, they have done pretty well consistently over a period of time. But the actual mix is, I mean, it's quite high growth is what they're aiming for. It's like 80% in shares and only 20% in bonds. And, I mean, there's various theories. I mean, maybe the more standard way of doing things is more like something like a 60-40 split or even more. Again, that's still standard. My personally thinking would be that's not the best, because it's still just bonds and it's still just shares. And both of those asset classes still have what's called counterparty risk, meaning, you know, you're relying upon some other person or entity to remain solvent in order for you to get your investment back, whether that be a government for, you know, bonds, which, you know, generally we should hope they should be able to give the money back. They have been so far. They might not give it back in necessarily, you know, at full value, or rather the value of the dollars that they give you back at the end might be whittled down, you know, via inflation and whatnot as well. So yeah, but in short, their holdings are invested 80% in shares currently. So that's definitely quite, you know, quite high growth if you compare it to probably other sort of sovereign wealth funds, I guess is what maybe they might be compared to around the world. So you're quite, you know, quite high, relatively high risk, I suppose, compared to what other people might be doing in other countries.
The point you made about the people holding the stocks and things like that, on behalf of, is it the fund, they have to stay solvent. If they don't, the fund can lose those assets, can they?
Yeah.
So there's some risk there. Is that a growing risk right now, that something like that could happen?
Well, I guess we're kind of talking about what would seem to be low probability events, like what they kind of talk about being black swans in the financial world, which is something, I think it's called black because you don't see a black swan. So that's, you know, you don't see it coming, basically. It comes out of the blue and it's a surprise. But, I mean, these things can happen. And back in, you know, 2008, we had, you know, they weren't exactly black swans, because there were some people warning about the, you know, the financial crisis back then. But they did hit most people out of the blue. And we were, by all accounts, we were actually quite close back then to everything completely falling and, you know, melting down. And it was only that on a Sunday night they kind of rushed something out in the US and basically propped up lots of institutions. So, I mean, it seems like far out kind of low probability events, but that's sort of the point. They're low probability, but they're very high risk. They're not just like with risk, there's, you know, the risk that your share might go down 10% or 20%. But there's also the risk that your investment might become worth zero, like absolutely nothing, because it's wiped out and goes bankrupt. And so if 80% of your investments are in shares, basically, I'm not saying that like the whole of the, you know, the world's not going to, well, we hope it's not going to get wiped out completely. Then it won't really matter what you're invested in. But, yep. But if a big event happens, and you know they talk about even in one of their previous reports I read a few years ago from BNZ Superfund, that you know there is the possibility of, you know, another financial crisis type like event, and their thinking is that you'll just have to ride it out, and that, you know, the last time the market's bounced back within 2 years, you just got to be patient, and as long as you don't withdraw it when it's fallen, you know, you'll be okay in the long run. But that's, as I said, that's all on the basis that those investments actually do all still exist, so that they can get back to where they were.
Yeah.
You know, not that they might be actually a chunk of them be wiped out. So that's my kind of thinking, is that what they view as risk and I view as risk aren't necessarily quite the same things. And because all those investments they hold are all reliant upon someone else, you know, whether it be another fund manager, or whether it just be that a particular company they might be invested in directly, you know, they're relying upon them remaining solvent as well. So, they're kind of like low probability events, but I think the low probability is not quite as low as what it might have been, you know, 20 years ago kind of thing. So they're things that are worth considering, I think. And that's my thinking, is that that's the point with gold, is that it doesn't have any counterparty risk.
No, because you've got it. Especially if you're putting it out of your own ground, you've got it somewhere. It physically exists.
Yep. Yeah.
And you've got options, right, then?
Yeah. And if you hold it yourself, and we have seen other countries that have actually repatriated gold that was held in the US or in the UK and have taken it, you know, back to within their own shores. That was sort of a bit of a run on that a few years ago with the likes of Germany kind of. Did that. Even Australia was kind of, I'm not sure what happened with them, whether they did in the end, but they were kind of talking about it as well. There was a bit of interest there. So, I mean, yeah, so as long as you hold it, then you're not reliant upon someone else, and, you know, you're not really at any risk of anything happening, you know, bar like a meteorite coming, landing on the planet and wiping us all out.
And again, smashing your gold storage area or something that direct hit. Right.
Those kind of things. So that's, I mean, I guess nothing's 100% perfect, but I think gold is like 99.9% of the way there in terms of an enduring store of wealth, you know, that history shows that it does what it's meant to do, which is just sit there and do nothing. But then again, it does over time. It actually, it's probably more of a function of the fact that our dollars and whatever currency units your country is, that your country deals in, that they're being devalued. So, but when you look at it, and like I said, I think I looked back after I did this and kind of compared how gold in New Zealand dollars has performed, you know, over the last about like 20 something odd years, maybe, anyway, we'll call it about 20-ish. And it's returned something like about, I think it's 495% over that period of time.
Wow, so that's not bad. Okay.
Just from sitting there and doing, doing nothing. So,
at the very least, it's an insurance policy for a nation, isn't it? It's sitting there, and okay, there's the cost of extracting it. Let's say, you know, we go about that ourselves. I don't see why we wouldn't get maximum value. And for a start, everyone feels better because you kind of feel there's security there. I mean, to hear from you say that our Reserve Bank really doesn't have anything physical in the basement at number one, the terrace, should everything turn to custard. I mean, think about that. Think about what that means.
Yeah. Well, not many people do, I don't think. Maybe they don't particularly either. Actually, and interestingly, we had one of our readers or subscribers, this was years ago, he actually sent an email to the Reserve Bank. I should have actually, now that we've kind of got on this topic, I wish I brought it up and I could have read it out because it was quite short and succinct. But the gist of it was that they said they don't hold gold and don't really have any intention to, because it doesn't meet their it was something like, I think it was something along the lines of like, it doesn't meet their liquidity requirements, sort of, you know. It's like, well, it's probably one of the most liquid assets in the world that you can turn into actual cash or dollars or whatever it might be immediately. It's more liquid than many other investments. It's maybe not quite as liquid as a stock or a bond that you can just click a button on and sell it, but it's still very liquid. So that was sort of an unusual
like that, they misunderstood or didn't quite get it or something.
Yeah. It was a good question that he asked them, that they asked them. He asked it in the right way, like, you know, do we hold any and why don't we? And that was the answer, which was fairly short and to the point. Okay. Not really that good an answer, I don't think, either. Because, I mean, that's the other thing, is if there's various studies that have been done that kind of showed, like, there's no harm in it, because there's studies that have been done that show that if you hold something like about 5 or 10% of your investment fund, say, in gold, that it doesn't really affect the long-term performance of the fund, but in the bad times, it evens that out and it means that, you know, you don't fall as much. So, I mean...
Like a buffer. It's a buffer.
Yeah, and it's just that's in a relatively normal time. We're not talking about during end of the financial system type time. We're just talking about normal times. So it means in a normal times, you're not going to do any worse. But you've got, like you mentioned before, you've got the insurance policy that in the black swan type event, you know, something out of the blue, well, you've got something there that'll make up for you. You're probably going to get some losses elsewhere. And it's going to still be valued at what it is. In fact, it probably won't be valued at what it is. And those times, it's likely that it'll be more highly valued and highly sought after. So that's why it acts as like the buffer. That's the perfect word that you said. It acts as a buffer against your other investments. So to me, it's almost like a bit of a no-brainer to hold it, because you're not getting any worse performance, because it's actually returned a good percentage per year itself over the years. Even though I say that's probably the wrong way to put it, because it hasn't really returned anything. It's more just that our dollar... the US dollar, whatever you want to measure it in, the pound, the yen, the renminbi, the whatever, you know, they're all losing value and going backwards. So it makes it look like gold's gone up, you know, 10% a year or whatever. Yeah. But that's still the way we measure everything these days, is in dollars. So we don't measure stuff in ounces currently like we maybe used to in the past. But, you know, maybe we'll end up back somewhere near there again in the future. I don't know.
So they'll be saying, what's that in ounces? What's that in ounces?
Yeah. I mean, it seems a bit like we're going back into like Roman times, you know. And maybe it's a combination of that
scaling
with sort of technology and things as well. So you're not going down to the farmer's market to swap your silver coin for a, you know, a loaf of bread and some veggies or something.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, maybe we might if it was a scenario as well, you know. So another flip side of having some small denomination precious metals is that fact that it is a useful tradable entity that you can swap for other everyday stuff as well. So
Okay. So if you were imagining a super fund here with gold as a component, what proportion of it would it be, do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, it probably doesn't have to be a massive amount when you look at various studies and things that have been done. It all depends on what period of time you compare things over. But there's lots of studies that I've read that sort of say anything from like 5 to 10%. I've had other ones that say up to 25%. But the ones that I have seen kind of said that, you know, keeping like 10%, say, doesn't actually reduce your returns that much. Like I said, like over the long run, your returns might go down a percent or so. But it gives you that protection in the bad times, and it gives you the protection in the black swan event times that, you know, you're actually still going to be left holding something. So it's probably not a huge amount. I mean, as I say, even like 5%, well, 5% is better than 0%, which is, as a nation, we have 0% currently as a government, as a central bank, and as a super fund. Or, I mean, it's comparable to probably like a sovereign wealth fund, like they might have in other, you know, in like some of the oil producing countries and things where they have the sovereign wealth fund. Like I think Japan probably has got one. I was meaning China actually has got them. So, I mean, you know, those kind of funds are already, they do own gold, probably a lot of them. And they probably own, you know, a decent chunk. They probably own something like 10% or something. Or, you know, that might be a fairly normal, reasonable kind of figure to hold, I think, that will make a meaningful difference in your kind of worst case scenarios or even in your just bad case scenarios of like a semi-financial crisis. You know, it smooths those returns out, basically. So it seems to me like, why wouldn't you? Because I can't really see a downside in it. And it almost seems like if I was the fund manager, like they do have a fiduciary duty to look at what they're holding and why and who they're responsible to. Well, in that duty, to me, it would seem that you should own some gold because it is not the same as everything else that you
Yeah,
hold.
right. So
That's
if
the
everything
point.
goes down, at least you def I remember once hearing a guy, remember when the finance companies collapsed? I don't know if it was around 2008. It might have been a little earlier than that, with all the Eric Watsons and all that. And I remember listening to a guy. He was, I think it was Radio Pacific back in the day, and they had some financial guy on. You could call in and he would give advice, And one person rang up, a very grumpy man. And he said that he had virtually lost everything. And they've been talking about, how you have to diversify your investments. And he said, I did diversify and I lost everything. And the guy said, well, what do you mean diversify? He said, I put money in every finance company. He said, that's not diversification. That's missing the point.
That is a very good point, and that's exactly it. I mean, and you could argue the same thing
They
about
all went down. He lost everything pretty much.
what most people do. Most people aren't really diversified, and the super fund, if they've got 80% of their investments in shares, well, then they're not really particularly diversified either. And then, I mean, I just saw something the other day that said that the US stock market has just reached the most, what's the word they use? It's the most concentrated it's ever been since 1930. So it's just those, those top, because the US stock market is actually doing quite well
Top
currently.
six companies, isn't it? That's about it.
Top six or seven. So they're the ones that they make up more of the broader market now than at any time apart from in the 1930s. And it was kind of close back in the dot-com boom. We're actually more concentrated than even in the dot-com boom. So that's that. So even if you think, oh, I'm invested in like the broad US stock market, well, actually, you're
Yeah.
only invested in about seven companies, really. And sure, they're doing great and technology and all those sorts of things and changing the world. And maybe they'll keep doing well also, but you're still not diversified at all then. You're in a very in a very specific area of one also specific asset class. So
Yeah. And
that's
too much power there, possibly in too small number of hands. Okay. So if people want to read more about the why the New Zealand Super Fund should invest in gold, the piece that you wrote, it's on goldsurvivalguide.co.nz. Is that where people can get in touch with you?
That's where it is on there. And it's got all our contact details on there, phone numbers and emails and all the rest of it. And if you want to find that particular article, well, you can probably just Google New Zealand Super Fund and gold or and gold investment. I'm sure it'll come up there, or just type in NZ Super Fund on our website and it'll come up as well. So go into a bit more detail there than what we've discussed about, but I mean we've kind of covered the basic gist of it. So yeah,
Yeah,
it's
good one. All right, Glenn Thomas, co-founder of the Gold Survival Guide. Good to have you back on RCR. We'll talk again.
thanks very much, Paul. Yeah, great to be here again.
RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.